This morning, we are visiting with Bill Lassiter. It is June the 5th, 2006. Bill, we had talked briefly about reminiscing a little bit about Houston, the Houston you remember from whatever direction you choose to remember it, in the 50s and 60s and maybe even mushing on into the 70s. I'd love to hear your thoughts of, I don't even know if you were born in Houston or when you came, but to share with us some of your recollections and reflections.
Well, I wasn't born in Houston. I was born in Washington, D.C., but I came here because my mother married a second time, and she married a man from Texas. So I came originally in 42, but then I went back to Washington to go to school for a while, and back here, and then back east to go to school. Started school in Tennessee, and then came back down here to finish at the University of St. Thomas, and then at Rice. So I've been here off and on, but mostly on. I was not really active in the art world in Houston until probably mid to late 50s, I guess, and on until now. But I do remember very much the MFA and some of its exhibitions, and I remember the Old Contemporary Arts Association when it was still downtown, before the move out to what was that? To
Holcomb, that Prudential.
Yes, out by the Prudential and mm-hmm. that property, and
yeah.
Then and then of course the construction of the new the building where it is now.
What was the first exhibition like when it opened? When the CAM opened?
God,
there was one that was kind of outrageous.
That was it. There were cages of rodents and roaches, and there was a huge construction that on the diagonal of colored bread. The artist, of course, I can't remember who that was, but that group of women that was so much in the news, they high kickers or something like that, the sort of like, you know, the Rangerettes or whatever,
uh-huh.
were performing, and somebody started some kind of argument about something or other, and the bread got tossed around, and it turned out to be just a real mess.
And this was the night of the opening?
Yes. Yes.
So what did Houstonians attending the museum, I mean, what did they think when they walked in to see the roaches?
Well, I think the whole idea of the show was largely disparaged. I think the feeling about it was that it was just a mess. I'm sure that there were people who didn't feel that way, but I think the majority of people, at least the whole consensus that I remember, was that it probably should never have happened.
Well, going back to the 50s, when you were sort of feeling your way into the arts, and did you first begin to find
actually, there wasn't just a lot of going on as far as galleries. There was, of course, there was a gallery on South Main that was next to a shop that was called Handmakers. And there was Catherine Swenson's New Arts, but after that gallery closed, there was another gallery that opened in that space. It was run by it was called the Kiko Gallery. Oh, I can remember just a fantastically beautiful show of Sol Steinberg. And they also had a show of is Corbusier a painter? It's the first time I'd ever seen anything like it, any of it. They did some rather wonderful stuff. And then there was a woman, the galley that was next to Handmaker's was owned by a woman whose name was Polly Marsters.
Mm-hmm.
And she handled mostly, I think, works by artists who were working in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And paintings, but I think a lot of work on paper.
How did the art scene feel then?
It was the same people who went to museum openings and also went to gallery openings. But it was kind of exciting. I mean, I was new to the art world, and it was, for me, it was another world.
Mm-hmm.
I was certainly, I guess I must have felt that I was being a part of the Houston scene as far as
mm-hmm.
I understood the Houston scene. And it was a wonderful introduction. Got me sort of started in buying a few things from time to time. There was also the Louisiana Gallery, which was, you know, Joan Crystal and Adrienne Rosenberg was her partner at the time. And they had some really good things, and they were also dealing to some extent with things from Mexico and pre-Columbian art and odds and ends of bentwood furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And she had artists from out of town, and it was an interesting mix.
Were you paying attention to the arts when the first CAA business got kicked off?
My first exposure was to the one when it was downtown. I remember a Calder show that was there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably my first memory of the CAA downtown. And then I did go to it, of course, when it was out at the Prudential.
Now, was that building behind the Prudential building that stands on Holcomb right now? Was the CAA behind the current building?
I remember it was. They had a sizable piece of property, and it was sort of tucked
back. I think they lent that property.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, what was it like that piece, that physically, what did it feel like, the piece there behind the Prudential building?
Well, you know, it was the one that was downtown.
Oh, they moved
actually
it.
Moved it.
That's right.
I think Edward probably told you about that because he was part of that.
It happened
one night down Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually trucked it out there and put it into place.
So what did it feel like? What was the inside like, that old CAA, that building that went in behind the Prudential?
It was a triangular sort of shaped building, and the space inside was sort of, I would imagine, difficult to deal with as far as installing exhibitions. And I'm not sure who was in charge. And maybe it was Jim Love. I know that he did installations for them for the longest time.
Uh-huh.
It usually turned out to look pretty good. You know, there was another gallery here that Meredith Long had a gallery. When I first was introduced to his gallery, it was on Westheimer, where Highland Village is now.
Mm-hmm.
Very close to where the railroad tracks are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I can't remember when he moved to where he is now, but he's been there for a long time. And, of course, he's been very successful in showing all kinds of artists, some of whom are very well known. There was, again, another gallery over there on... is he on San Filipe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The David Gallery. Did you know the David Gallery? It was in a building that I believe Charles Tapley had designed. I may be wrong about that. It was a little complex. Grace David had a daughter and a son, and her son had a bookshop which was in the front of the little complex. The gallery itself was at the back, and Grace had a rather wonderful apartment upstairs, and the bookshop was pretty splendid, with a big spiral staircase, and he dealt extensively in rare editions and first editions and things like that. And Grace was showing all kinds of art. She had a wonderful eye, and they had just extraordinary openings. I remember they had a tattoo show.
You're not the only one to mention that. It must have opened a lot of eyes. I think Henry Gadbaugh might have mentioned the tattoo show.
We probably did.
I mean, it was pretty interesting. I
remember that her openings were really productions, and they were just heavily attended.
So you don't remember when her gallery closed?
I remember that. I don't remember what the year was. I know that she was going to leave town.
How would you compare Houston, Texas in the late 50s to Houston, Texas in the early 2000s as far as the art scene is concerned? Besides size.
Well, as I said, of course, you ran into the same people at the museum openings and at gallery openings, and there was an intimacy that doesn't, I think, exist now because things have changed so and gotten so much bigger. There's so many more galleries, so many more openings. You still run into essentially a core of people that seem to, at least, I don't go to lots of galleries. I don't go to lots of openings anymore. But I do go to two or three galleries that I'm especially fond of. And there is a core of people that I recognize and know from those openings, those galleries. And but there's a world of people that I haven't a clue who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city has, of course,
city.
Gotten so big. There's just a whole new world of people. There's lots and lots of interest in young people,
mm-hmm.
from young people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to the museum openings, they're going to the gallery openings, and they're buying art. So that's all
well
and good. But things have really changed. When I first came to Houston, it was a very small city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the feeling was small.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, more laid back, just a lot simpler, it seemed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And downtown, well, goodness.
It was different.
When you went downtown, you know, then, of course you got dressed up. Ladies wore hats and gloves.
And you had the Sackowitz tea room.
Oh my
and
God!
The sticky buttons.
Sackowitz.
Were there any outstanding exhibitions or things that you can remember? That
well, I remember a wonderful show at the MFA, which had to do with Italian design, and it was full of just wonderful things. Fornacetti,
mm-hmm.
marvelous silver, marvelous furniture, marvelous glassware, beautiful fabrics. It was a real eye-opener.
Very sophisticated.
There was another show that had to do with De Chirico, which was one of those extravagant productions with things floating around in the air like, you know, musical instruments, and I don't know who was responsible for the installation there, but it was quite a show. Of course, you know, the museum then was, that was before the Mies wing, and
well, tell me about the Mies wing when that started under construction, and how did
well, that of course was, my feeling is, the Mies wing before the addition of the continuation of the Mies wing, you know, where how it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, Cullinan Hall was the end of the Mies, and there was a steps that came down from there.
Mm-hmm.
onto the lawn. And that's where Mr. Sweeney had installed the huge, you know, the monumental Olmec head for that show. There's still photographs of, you know, that production.
Now, the lawn then was on the Bissonnette side. You're talking about that part?
Yes, yes.
Oh, how beautiful that would have been.
And that was another show that Mr. Sweeney was responsible for, which was just stunning, was when he had done a pool outside on that lawn, and he had the Picasso bathers.
Mm-hmm.
That was the installation. And he had, he was extraordinary. He had such an eye and such a feel for exhibitions. He did three Spaniards, and I think there might have been three works of art in Cullinan Hall, in that vast space, the old Cullinan Hall. He had Picasso, he had Miro, and God, who else? Maybe it was Chieda. You know, he used to hang paintings from the ceiling on wires, freestanding. They weren't against the wall necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the famous Totems Not Taboo, which was Dr. McAggie's installation for the CAA.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Cullinan's stipulation, I think, about Cullinan Hall was that it was to be used by the CAA when necessary, when they needed it, because their space was so limited, and she wanted them to be involved.
Everyone has mentioned that Totem's Not Taboo.
Oh, yeah.
Exhibition. It must have just knocked everybody over.
Well, I think it did. She was another person who knew how to put things together. I mean, it was extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And her shows at when she was at St. Thomas were breathtakingly beautiful. And Mrs. Demeneal had the same
knack. She knew what to
do. Wonderful.
Was Mies commissioned another time to expand that design, to wrap that around the front, or not?
I don't think he was commissioned a second time. I think all of this was done with the idea of adding it later, perhaps because of funding.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I would think that that certainly figured. I know Miss Cullinan only gave a certain amount of money
mm-hmm.
for the original.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, my feeling is that the original was better looking than
enough.
What we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think I love the upstairs space.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my personal feeling is that the entryway is, there's something a little bit wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's of course just, you know, my own personal feeling. But the original one was so spectacular. You just walked up the steps. They were sort of shallow steps. Open those glass doors, and you were in Cullinan Hall, that gorgeous
soaring
space.
So all that free entry wasn't there, and that was grass and outside.
That was lawn. That sort of was terraced down to the sidewalk, and
fabulous.
Across the street, you know, where the sculpture garden is now,
right.
Was
sure.
the old it was a an apartment building. sort of Spanish style with, I can't remember the name of it. It was white, as I recall, white stucco with a tile roof.
Well, did you visit artist studios at all? Or did you personally mostly through the museums and the...
Actually, that's true. It wasn't until later that I got to know individual artists to any extent. I was really a real newcomer to the whole scene. Edward was very much a part of introducing me to that world. But I did know Richard Stout for the longest time,
mm-hmm.
simply because he was courting a friend of mine, and we had apartments that were across the street from each other. And Richard was then in his present house, but it was a great deal different from the house as we know it now.
Well, it's now a little museum, in a way.
I knew people like Ogden and Blaine, Hickey and Robertson, the photographers,
uh-huh.
because they had a house on...
they were close to that.
They were very close, close to here, actually. Not Yoakum, but I think they were on Mount Vernon.
I think
they lived right next door to Dick Ray and his wife.
Oh, they did?
Right next door, exactly.
And they were one... I worked with them, I think, only one time, but they... one or two times, but they were wonderful. You know, totally professional.
Yeah.
And just did a great job. Well, what else can we think about to talk or to try to remember that readers would find interesting as far as Houston arts in the... like, even in the late 60s, early 70s? Do you remember anything special? I interviewed Jim Searles, who's really a little late for this sort of time period, because I wanted to capture him because of the beginning of Lawndale, and
mm-hmm.
how Lawndale came into being and when he started that, which you remember and which I remember, how that kind of got on track. And so I have that. But for the purpose of this reflection, the mid-70s and later is probably another story, so to speak. I might go a little bit. But can you think of anything else or remember anything else that was, you know, interesting, different, the personalities involved? When I met Kiko, she was not in the gallery business. She was actually, I think, trading in furs with the Russians or something.
Really?
Exotic. I mean, you know, she had that Japanese restaurant for a while.
Well, I was just going to say,
San Philippi?
Wasn't she involved in food?
Yeah, she opened that restaurant on San Philippi, and I went to it. And I don't know how our paths crossed, but I met with her every time. I'm probably remembering her gallery. She told me all about it. And then, of course, she has all this exotic stuff going on around her. She's trading in these... I'm pretty sure it was Russian furs.
Mm.
Probably sables and, you know, whatever. That would be Kiko's. But she was very attractive and very dramatic, and I'm sure a lot of fun in Houston.
Yeah.
A lot of fun in Houston. Well, now, in those days then, so Meredith was going on, and you had these other galleries that we've kind of mentioned.
Well, we also had, aside from art galleries, you know, we had a wonderful... a shop called Handmakers, which was right there next to Polly Marster's gallery. And then there was the most wonderful little restaurant called Rudy's, which was a private club. And next door to Rudy's was Handmakers. And Handmakers had wonderful stuff, most of which was unique.
Who was running Handmakers? Do you remember? Was it more like crafts, like weaving and...
Yes,
glass.
They dealt a lot with things that were crafts.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Dileska,
mm-hmm.
for instance, showed, he used to do mosaic tabletops, mm-hmm. and then he did a whole series of fountains, outdoor fountains, which were shown outside. They had a side area, sort of a little patio.
Mm-hmm.
And she had wooden things and ceramic things and
textiles,
folk things from Mexico and from Peru. There were textiles, there were weavings.
Right.
It was beautiful, and then across the street You know, there's a restaurant on the corner called Julia's now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that space, there were three shop spaces that were all designed by the same architect, and of course I can't remember who, but they were very handsome, very, very simple, very contemporary. And one of the spaces was occupied by a shop that dealt in flatware, silver, crystal, and that was probably the first time I ever saw Spratling Silver. You know, the American who started or who revived the silver situation in Tosco. And then of course we had another shop, which was called Wells Design, and it was Herb and his brother and their mother, and it was over here on Mount Vernon, in a great big sprawling house, and they lived upstairs, and the shop was downstairs, and there was nothing else like it in Houston.
I'll bet
it was just another eye-opener, because they were showing the best-looking furniture, the best, the most beautiful things in crystal, flatware, all contemporary, and basketry, and they did custom upholstery. It was just a really wonderful place.
Well, let me ask you, do you remember any funny incidences with artists back then or not? Or interesting encounters or interesting observations?
And Carl, of course, was very much involved with the Demoniels and with Dr. McAggie. I mean, he was in school when they were together, and I think that was when he fell in love with the whole world of art. And strange, you know, it's now come full circle. You know, he's back at the Menil.
I know. And what a marvelous place for him to finish his career.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't be better.
Right.
It couldn't be better.
I think he probably agrees.